So we were talking earlier about there's this ridiculous ruling from a federal judge that the president of the United States is no longer allowed to block people on Twitter because, I don't know. Like, literally, because I don't know.
Right. Yeah.
we sent out the bat signal to lawyer extraordinaire Jeff O'Brien. Kind enough to call in. Good morning, sir.
Good morning.
Have you had a chance to look at this ruling at all?
I haven't looked at I've been reading a lot of stories on the ruling. I haven't had a chance to actually look at the ruling, but I'm familiar with the Virginia case where this, the first instance where they, where this happened, and so I think that was precedent for this judge to do it. So
now I mentioned earlier, one of the first things, correct me if I'm wrong, I'm certainly no lawyer, but one of the first things you have to do when you're filing a lawsuit is demonstrate some degree of harm.
Yes and no. When you're dealing with, I mean, certainly with a lot of, like, civil cases, like the stuff that I do all the time, yeah, we have to show damages usually as an element of the claim. When you're dealing with constitutional issues, though, typically you can demonstrate, you know, that you're arguing harm to the public. So this, you know, when you're talking about a First Amendment case, you're talking about, you know, an overall harm to the public in terms of the muting of public discourse or something like that. So you don't necessarily have to have personal harm, but you have to be, represent a group, you know, the public, where it would be, where the public at large could be harmed.
Well, we live in a world now where everything the president tweets gets reprinted and reported on by every major news agency. We also live in a world where if the president blocks you on Twitter, it's not that difficult to go set up a second Twitter account and follow him again. So right. how is there any justification for saying that the president doesn't have the right to some degree of free association on social media?
Well, you got a U.S. District Court judge in Manhattan. My guess is they're probably a Clinton or an Obama appointee. All they have to hear is that Trump is a party to the lawsuit. You know where they're ruling.
Right.
You know, they'll make up the law behind it to get to where they want. So this will likely, the Department of Justice will likely appeal this. It's probably a case that needs to go, you know, between this and the Virginia case, and there's probably others out there. This probably is a case that ultimately needs to be decided by the Supreme Court to determine what the limits are in terms of First Amendment and Twitter. Because, you know, like you said, Drew, people see and read the president's tweets all over on the internet. If the argument is that you're infringing upon somebody's, you know, the absolute right to criticize the government or the elected official, you can do that on your own Twitter feed. You don't need to be following that official's Twitter page so you control them and put up, you know, all sorts of disgusting, vile things in response to their tweet. That doesn't seem to be protected by the First Amendment. You can still have your discourse about whatever the issue is, because, I mean, it's not like you're having a conversation with the president. He's not responding to your tweet.
Is there something to be said when it comes to this particular ruling, speaking to the larger issue of activist judges? Like, is it good that we see this play out in public and we have these types of ridiculous, issues presented to these courts and these rulings go this way to sort of expose the level of activism that is taking place with these judges? Because I can't remember a time when we've seen so many rulings where you kind of sit back and scratch your head, or you see them be challenged having to go all the way up to the Supreme Court because of a particular local judge in a particular jurisdiction has decided to really use more of an activist mentality than sort of a rule of law mentality.
Yeah, John, that's a good point. You know, it's interesting. You know, I think my very first appearance on the show way back was when Drew, we were talking about when the Wisconsin federal judge had thrown out their voter ID laws. And we talked about this when there was a split, when Scalia was after he had died, when there was the split on the court, and, you know, the lower court judges were just running everything up because they knew that it would, you know, not be overturned by the Supreme Court. You would think, because judges don't like to be overturned, that this would have, you know, they would have curtailed this once Gorsuch took his seat, but they haven't. They just don't care. I mean, some of these appointees, it's like, you know, we're just going to do it because it's Trump. And so I guess we're going to see a lot of jurisprudence from the Supreme Court in the coming years on some of these issues, because they're ultimately going to decide these, you know, when they have to overturn these whack job opinions from the lower courts that are politically motivated.
What can be done about that apart from paying more attention to the individuals that are put up for these particular, you know, for these particular seats. And I mean, I guess it speaks to a larger issue, and I know that's not exactly where we are, but it speaks to a larger issue of how often is this type of judge activism taking place in smaller rulings that we never hear about, where, you know, people just don't have the money to go and continue to push a particular claim, and yet you've got a judge that's handing down their opinions and their judgment, you know, based off, again, their activism more than the rule of law.
Yeah, I think, you know, the activist side, in these politically motivated cases, I think you see it more. But I do think, you know, depending on who the judge is, remember, you know, every federal judge, you know, whether it be the, you know, district court, court of appeals, or all the Supreme Court, is appointed by the president. You know, certainly, if you get, I would say, if you're in front of a judge that might be appointed by, say, Bill Clinton or Barack Obama, I think when you have an issue of, say, if it's an issue of, you know, dealing with a federal agency or property rights or whatever, I think you're probably going to get a judge that is more sympathetic to the government's position. Whereas I think when you get someone like that's been a Republican appointee, I do think that there is sometimes skepticism about the government's position. So I think it's inevitable that, you know, everybody's talking about judges being non-political. I think inevitably their politics, their political philosophy is somewhat intertwined with their judicial philosophy. I think, you know, judges are human.
Yeah.
It's going to happen. So I think that the lesson is just be aware that when you're voting for president, you're voting for the person that's putting these judges in that could end up hearing a case you're involved with.
Yeah, it is unfortunate that, you know, it seems like, you know, in the past couple of, let's say, generations, you know, the awareness of how the judiciary could sort of shape our laws, shape our policies, shape the direction of our country, really came to fruition. And that's been a major focus of both parties for a long time is, you know, get elected, get enough power. So, and appoint as many judges as you can, because, you know, once judges start making decisions, the process to sort of change that direction is cumbersome and difficult.
Yeah, and at the state level too. I mean, the governor appoints, you know, the district court judges, the court of appeals judges, the Supreme Court justices. Now, they, after 6 years, they have to run for re-election. But what happens a lot of times in practice is that whoever's on the bench, maybe on the district court they'll run again. But you get some of the higher courts, they just choose not to run again, let the governor appoint somebody else. So you never really get a chance to elect your judge.
Right. Jeffrey O'Brien, lawyer extraordinaire. Thanks for giving us a few minutes this morning. We appreciate it.
No, thanks, dude.
No problem. I wish it would happen a day earlier so I could have sat in with Jeremy Piven yesterday. I wish this ruling would have come out a day earlier.
Well, we'll try to time it better next time. Take care.
Sounds good. Take care.